There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Welcome back to the Rostradamus Show. It's yours truly, Raheem Palmer, a.k.a. the Rostradamus. And as always, y'all know how it's going down. We got a special guest in the building. We got my main man, Bobby Stanley, the prop holiday. We're going to discuss some NBA futures. We're going to discuss some props. We're going to discuss everything related to the NBA. So how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. My toddler was up all night with a fever. So I'm like, this is the perfect setup to do a Ringer podcast show is be up all night. So I'm killing it.
Oh, man. I can't even imagine what that's like. I don't have kids yet. I'm still living the bachelor, not really the party lifestyle, but I'm still living the lifestyle of just somebody young and single. And I'm in my 30s, but I feel like I'm in my 20s.
We are two sides of the same coin. I'm mid-30s, married with a kid, and I got another one coming. So it's life is good, man. We can do this together. Very, very. Go ahead.
No doubt. But so we got the NBA playoffs starting soon. And this is like the craziest part of the year. So as a prop bettor, how are you approaching this? Because I know it has to get really messy because, I mean, me, I'm mostly betting spreads and totals. How are you handling this?
This week sucks. This week is brutal. I'm trying to avoid double-digit spreads as much as possible. What games have implications? But then some of those double-digit spreads, you'll get a random guy maybe 10, 15 minutes before tip-off. They'll give you a Bones Highland line. They won't give you that all day. And then they say, oh, you know, half the Clippers are out. You can have Bones Highland 5 minutes before tip-off. But you can get some good value in guys like that playing big minutes in games that really don't matter. So this week's been a little up and down for me. I'm trying to pick my spots on competitive games.
That makes sense. Are you playing like anything in the live markets, the live prop markets? Because, you know, the other day I had a friend text me, we're watching the Boston Celtics game, and he's like, yo, you got to play Pritchard overs. And then they had it locked, so you couldn't even play it. So is that like an approach for you?
I do love live markets. I like it. The problem is, like you said, the guys I want, they lock them all the time. I think a trick to live betting, never bet anything when it's not a TV timeout or a timeout or a halftime or an in-between quarter, because you're playing with a delay. If you got a YouTube TV, if you got cable, if you're not in the building, these books are going to have a 3, 4, 5 second advantage over you. So I would just say if you are going to live bet, save it to TV timeouts, halftime, end of quarters, things like that.
That makes sense. So how are you approaching the playoffs?
Playoffs is fun. I mean, a lot of player prop handicapping goes into, you know, I'll break it down to a points per minute, a rebounds per minute, and then I'll try to project their minutes. When it comes to the playoffs, we all know rotation shrink, lineup shrink. Your stars are going from 32 to 34 minutes to maybe 38 to 40. And I can tinker with that projection. and compare it to the line we're getting. Lines are going to go up. Overs are always going to be favorable to the public, but maybe they got it wrong. Maybe they didn't adjust it enough. So that's how I kind of look at it. I get it down to a per minute and then project from there.
That makes sense. That definitely makes sense. So we're looking at the board right now. The Boston Celtics are plus 165 to win the NBA title. You got the Denver Nuggets behind them at +3-1. Is there anybody you like on the board or any teams that you're saying, you know what, this team has value going into the postseason?
I mean, there's two teams that a lot of people have been talking about heading into the playoffs that aren't in the top tier, and I still feel like we're getting value on them. I look at these lines last night. I'm getting the Mavericks at 25-1 and the 76ers at 22-1. And if I look at the Mavericks, they're going to get the Clippers in round one. I think the reason that they're 25-1 on most books right now is because of their path to the finals. You'll get the Clippers. You're going to draw Denver in the second round. And then by the time you make it to the Western Conference, maybe end up getting an OKC or Minnesota, and it lightens up a bit. But at 25-1, I mean, they're 18-7 post All-Star break, third best net rating in that span, best defensive rating over the last 15. And I mean, if we're just looking at duos, how many duos would you put over Kyrie and Luka right now? Probably Jamal and Jokic, Jamal Murray and Jokic. I don't know, Paul George and Kawhi, you can flip a coin there. Jalen Brown and Jason Tatum.
I would not put Paul George and Kawhi over Kyrie and Luka at this point offensively.
Not right now. That's what I'm saying, though.
I'm
getting 25-1. And then obviously the first round matchups, what everybody's talking about. I saw you tweet it before we jumped on the show. Luka's 5-8 in 13 playoff games against the Clippers. That's not bad when you consider how bad the teams he was on. And this is by far the best team he's ever played with. They're the best defensive team he's ever played with. And him and Kyrie are lockstep right now. So if we're just talking futures, give me the Mavericks at 25-1. I threw $25 on it the other day, and now I think it's down. You could probably see 22 and 18-1, but I still like it. I think that you can make the argument they're the third to second best team in the West right now behind Denver.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I think we've been beating this tune for the last couple of weeks with this Mavericks team. They just, like, when you have two scorers in Luka and Kyrie who can get it done in the clutch and out-execute you. Like, just to put this in perspective, the best clutch team in the league this year by record is the Chicago Bulls, 26-16, followed by the Denver Nuggets. But the Denver Nuggets have the best net rating in the league. You look right behind them, you got the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks are 23-9 in the clutch. Offensive rating of 127, defensive rating of 106, and a net rating of 20. So they have the third best net rating in the league in the clutch. So I just look at them. If you just need to out-execute them, like, and it matters in the fourth quarter, I don't think you're going to be able to do it. So FanDuel, it's very interesting because FanDuel has the Mavericks at 18-1. They have the Clippers at 9-1, but this is the first playoff series that they actually have up. And earlier this morning, the Clippers were -110. Actually, they were -122. They're now up to -130 favorites in that series. Now, they will have home court, but you're getting the Dallas Mavericks at +110. Is that a bet that you're interested in?
Yes, 100%. 100%. If you look at, we know what happens in the fourth quarter. It's a two-score game. What are you doing? You're hunting switches. And if I get a one-on-one with Luka or Kyrie, I would say they're the two best at doing it. So if you can keep them close, and their defense should keep them close in most instances, there's no reason that we shouldn't be talking about the Mavericks at 25-1, and especially getting out of the first round against the Clippers. The Clippers have been Jekyll and Hyde. Obviously, Russell Westbrook coming back has done a lot for them. They've looked better, but I'm not sold. There was a stretch where I bought in, but that second half of the season, probably a little bit post All-Star break. Yes, there were some injuries there, but I'm skeptical to say the least.
Yeah, I'm very skeptical of this team. And I think the biggest thing for me with the Clippers is that you always have to worry about health. Like, that's the biggest thing with this Clippers team. But to me, James Harden has not looked like the same guy at all. And you saw it last year with the Sixers. Even, like, to me, he's very feast or famine. When his jump shot is falling, you can kind of depend on him. But when it's not, he can't get to the rim in the same way he would previously. After the All-Star break, this Clippers team is just 13-11. And they have a net rating of just -0.1. So I think the Mavericks are by far the better team here. And so I'm probably going to find myself on the Mavericks. I haven't bet into it yet. I still always like to think about how I want to approach this. Do I want to approach it game by game? Do I want to approach it series by series? Actually, how is your approach for that? Like, are you more of a game by game better, or you're like are you playing series bets? Are you playing like +1.5, +2.5, or something like that?
I'm playing game by game mostly because it is the player props. And then with that, you can watch the adjustments from there. What tweaks are these teams making from game one to game two? Going into it, I already have some idea of who are the better rebounding team. I know the Boston Celtics are going to shoot the hell out of above the break threes. Who's the top above the break three rebounder of the opposing team? And then how does that adjust from game one to game two? Those are the things I'm getting into very specific player prop angles. And these matchups, we have an entire season of data to say, this is what they do. This is when these guys are good at defending at the rim. These guys can't defend a mid-range shot to save their life. It's going to be a good game for the Phoenix Suns. So that's what, those are the things I'm looking at a game-to-game basis.
That makes sense. I'm kind of with you on the game by game. Like, unless I really like a series price, I try to just approach it game by game just because it gives me that room for error and just be able to adjust. Is there any team going into the postseason that you do not like? Like teams that you just, you know, you feel like are overvalued, or just a team that you're looking to fade?
Minnesota, they're the opposite of what Dallas is. When I get to the fourth quarter, I know I have two guys, if everything breaks down, that can get off their own shot at any point. And in Minnesota, I've seen lapses in the fourth quarter. It looks clunky. If it's just Ant going 1-on-4, that's not going to end well in the playoffs. I mean, they do have obviously the easier path depending on how the West shakes out. But Minnesota, for me, I think offensively, they're going to struggle late in games. So they seem, I mean, the value isn't as high as you think for a number two seed. I think they're like 18-1, 20-1 to win the finals. But I'm just not high on them yet. And I think Naz Reid has done an exceptional job, but Karl Anthony Towns as another playmaker and creator would have been very beneficial come a playoff series. And
he's actually coming back. He's coming back this weekend. He's supposed to play in the Sunday game, but that kind of scares me because like you don't have that room for adjustment. Like, so you saw Trae Young just came back. And Karl Anthony Towns is coming back this week. So you just kind of, it almost throws off the rhythm of this team. Yeah. And I'm always concerned about stuff like that. You know, Bill Simmons always talks about the Ewing theory. Well, Karl Anthony Towns felt like a real Ewing theory candidate.
Yeah. Nope, I agree. But no, Minnesota's a team I'm not too high on. And then Cleveland, I still don't know what to make of them. I mean, we're going to see a game tonight against the Pacers. I got to play in that game from a player prop angle, but I don't know what to make of Cleveland. They're overrated at times. They're underrated at times. We don't have a big enough subset of Donovan, Garland, Mobley to say, okay, I confidently feel this. There's a chance they get bounced in round one depending on who their matchup is.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on both of those. And I think the biggest thing about Minnesota is very interesting because they have the defense to lock anybody down. But those clutch numbers are just abysmal. You're talking about a team which is 24th in net rating in the clutch. But interestingly enough, they're 20-15 in the clutch. So it's just like their defense is kind of getting them over the hill until you meet a team like Denver, or you meet a team like Clippers, or you meet a team like the Mavericks. So it's going to be interesting to see who they match up with. Now, if you're looking at those the two younger teams, the Minnesota Timberwolves and Oklahoma City Thunder, who would you say is the most vulnerable out of those two teams?
We actually talked about Oklahoma City when you did my show earlier in the season. I got Oklahoma City at 50-1 to win the championship back in, I don't know, September, October, right before the season started. I like what I see from Oklahoma City. I still wish they went and got a rim protector at the deadline. So I think they're a better team, but I think they're more susceptible in the sense that if they draw an Anthony Davis, it's not a good matchup. If they get Jokic, I mean, no one is a good matchup with Jokic, but I think they're going to struggle defending the rim come the postseason. I would be less shocked if Oklahoma City advanced versus Minnesota. I still think Minnesota, they need to tweak that roster a little bit. But I love Anthony Edwards. So.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards. I mean, that guy's he's the next star in this league. And I love watching him every single night. So We have a big NBA slate tonight. I mean, absolutely huge. I actually hate these NBA slates when it's this many games. There's no games on tomorrow. What are you feeling from a props perspective?
I totally agree with you. I hate when it's too many games. I like to sit down and go through almost every angle as I can. You know, rebounding angles, who has an assist angle, things like that. When there's 13 games, it can be a little overwhelming. So I try to take away the double digits, the blowouts, the games that don't matter. So the two player props that I'm on tonight are in two games that should be fairly competitive. We already talked about the Pacers. So let's talk about Evan Mobley. I got him over 25.5 points and rebounds tonight. It's minus 115. This is essentially a playoff game. Both teams, I think, are either one game apart in the East. So this game is going to matter. Mobley's averaging 27.2 PR per game against teams ranked top 10 in pace this season. Indiana's second. He's hit this in 60% of games against those teams that are in top 10 in pace. You could pivot to his double-double. It's the same line. I like either or, but I like the scoring upside of Mobley tonight. He had 33 against Indiana earlier in the season, and the Pacers just continue to struggle defending the paint. Their second most field goals made in the restricted area over the last 10, seventh most in the paint non-restricted area over the last 10, and Mobley has the most field goals made in the short mid-range for that Cavs team. Obviously, Mitchell, he's playing tonight, so you kind of got to factor that in. What does that mean for Mobley? When he plays 29 minutes this season, he averages 27 PR. He hits this in 18 of 30. When he plays this with Mitchell, when he plays over 30 and he plays with Mitchell, he's hit this in 17 of 33 games. So a little bit over 50%. And then 6 of 10 with Mitchell against those teams top 10 in pace. So everything is telling me this should be a 26.5 line, and I'm getting it at 25.5 in a game that matters. So I'm rolling with Mobley over 25.5 points and rebounds.
I like that one. That's a good one. Shoot, I need to start jumping on these props. I'm more of a, like a sides and totals guy, but every time I hear you break down a prop, it's just like I feel like, damn, I'm missing something. So do you have like a props model, or is this like, you know, just more so research based?
It's more research based. A lot. I mean, I start with I'll take a points per minute, rebounds per minute, get that number, and then project their minutes. That gives me kind of a baseline projection. There's no model to it, but you get the idea. But with this last year, I've gotten really into NBA advanced stats. I mean, I'm looking at teams that are allowing the most catch and shoot threes, and I'm checking who are the top catch and shoot 3-point shooters against that team, and then who gets the most above the break assists on that team, and I'm trying to play it like that. It's very in depth. It takes a lot of time, which is why I love the smaller slates. But when you're right, you're dead on. And then there's obviously NBA advanced stats, and then something called PBP stats, where I'm checking on off stats, and you can see if a guy's out, what does that mean for the rest of the team? You know, whose points go up, whose points go down, whose assists go up, assists go down, and sometimes it's counterintuitive, but it's very beneficial. So Draymond assist line was at 6.5 when Steph was out 2 games ago, right? A majority of assists go to Steph, and I went under. I faded under. He landed on 4 assists. Steph comes back the next game. His line drops down to 5.5. I go over just because it's very counterintuitive for the books to say Steph Curry's out. Draymond's going to have a higher usage. The ball's going to be in his hands more. He should get more assists. It's not what happens. You know, 50% of his assists are going to Steph Curry. He's out of the game. So I'm fading him there, and then I'm buying him back low on the next game when Steph Curry comes back. He finishes with 8. So data, man, too much data, but it's fun when you get it right.
And you're also basically buying low and selling high on these teams. It's the stock market, like, you know, just like any other market. So I totally get it. What's your other play?
I love this one, man. Trey Murphy of the Pelicans over 5.5 rebounds. It's minus 130, so it comes with some juice. But I've been going back to this line since Ingram went down. Since Ingram has gone down against Orlando, I think it was the last 11 games, he's hit this in 9 of 11 games. He has the most total rebounds on the team. He has 80 rebounds in 11 games. He's averaging 7.2 in that no Ingram stretch. So this line at 5.5 seems cheap. I'll pay the juice. I don't mind. His rebounding portfolio, that's what I like to call it, where are his rebounds coming from? He leads the team in long to mid-range rebounds and third most above the break threes. Well, who's he playing tonight? The Golden State Warriors. Over the last 10, they're shooting the fifth most mid-range shots, the fifth most above the break threes in that span. I love this line. I'm playing it at the 5.5 for one unit, and then I'm dropping down half a unit. I'm playing 7+ at +145. So on a per 36 basis, he's averaging 6 rebounds. He's played 37 plus in 7 of the last 10. Raheem, he's not coming off the court. He's the staple of this Pelicans team, at least from a floor standpoint. So I'm going Murphy over 5.5 rebounds.
See, I like those two. I think you gave up. Did any of those move the markets yet? What would you play those down? What would you play those up to, those two props?
If you can get 6.5 at plus 100 to minus 105, I'd still play it. I would actually rather play the 6.5 at minus 105 than play 5.5 at like minus 150, if we're being completely honest. I think 7 is a pretty good projection, given what tonight means. This game still matters to both teams. So on that one, and then if it gets to 26.5 on Mobley, I'd stay away. 26.5 is too high. The 25.5 has the high as the 60% hit rate, not the 26. So eat the juice on 25.5. Don't play 26.5.
Do you ever find yourself searching for middles on these props? So you'll hit it one way and then you'll bounce back and then just try to hit it the other way?
Not as much. I mean, pretty much arbitrary, like our betting. I feel like you need to have such a big bankroll to make the most of that. And we talked about my betting, my wallet versus yours, a little bit different. I'll live bet and hedge if it gets to that. If I'm getting to the last leg of a parlay, I'll hedge it down. That doesn't bother me. But as far as our betting, one, I don't want to get banned. I know you could spread it across books. You can't say it on the same book. It's not something I do as much just because my bankroll is not massive. Like I said, man, I got another kid on the way.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense. I have a pick for the 100 today.
Okay.
Right now we won two yesterday. So we had the New York Knicks minus 2.5. We got the worst of it there. And then we had the New Orleans Pelicans money line minus 105. So we're now 11-8. Plus $210. Probably should be up higher than that, but we've had some just bad variants. I'm going to lay the 7.5 with the Philadelphia 76ers. Magic have lost 3 out of the last 4 games. They failed to cover 8 out of the last 10. And offense is really struggling. 20th in offensive rating, 112 points per possessions, 9 garbage time minutes the last 2 weeks. Sixers, meanwhile, they're red hot, covering 8 straight. It's very reminiscent of like the 2018 season. A lot of Sixers fans will remember this, but the Sixers won 16 straight and cover 11 out of their last 16. Last 2 weeks, Sixers, 3rd in offense rating, 118 points per possessions. 9th in defense rating, 110 points per possessions. And you look at how the Sixers have played this Magic team, they've absolutely dominated them. They've won and covered 9 out of the last 10. And obviously, it's a different roster, but they won both of their games against the Magic by double digits this year. And the biggest thing with this Magic team is that they foul a lot. You don't want to foul a lot if you're playing Joel Embiid. They're 24th in free throw rate. The Sixers are 2nd in free throw rate. So I just think this is a matchup where the Sixers they're rolling right now. They have a small chance of getting out of the play-in tournament. If Indiana were to lose tonight and the Sixers were to win, like, they have a real shot of getting out of this. And then, you know, they're only one game behind the Magic. So I think this is a real motivational spot for the Sixers. I know the Magic are the best team in the league against the spread, but I think they've really fizzled out lately. And if Franz Wagner is out, I just think this is bad for the Magic. So I'm laying 7.5 with the Sixers. What's your thoughts?
I was looking at this game. I was looking at Embiid's assists simply because of how well Orlando packs the paint. I think Jonathan Isaac's probably going to be a second team all defense this year. So they have a guy they can throw at him, but he's still Joel Embiid. I'm not trying to shortchange him. I was looking at his assist line tonight. I think it was at 4.5, heavily juiced. So that's something to have an eye on. We talked about the Mavericks a lot in the beginning. The other team that I threw a future on at 22-1 was Philly to win the East. I mean, outside of Boston, with Giannis's recent injury, you can make the case it's wide open. Why wouldn't I take someone at 22-1 with the second best coach in the East to Spoelstra? So people forget very quickly how good this Philly team was earlier in the season. I think they had, before his injury, they had the 5th best winning percentage. We were talking about Embiid like, oh, no, this was the MVP he deserved to win. That's how good he was playing. Nick Nurse kind of unlocked something, allowing him to run the offense through him and really get assists and change everything about him and Maxey. And there was like a solid 2 weeks of the Kobe and Shaq 2.0, if you remember that. That's the world we live in. I do like the Sixers, especially where they're at, getting Embiid with some type of health. Obviously, I like him tonight, especially if Franz Wagner's out. His shooting's been abysmal this year. He's taken a huge step back from the three-point line.
Yeah, if he's out, I think this is an absolute smash spot. I'm going to try to grab it and get ahead of the number right now. And, you know, hopefully he's out and this goes up even higher. Obviously, yesterday.
I was going to say, we're not going to bet the Markelle Fultz revenge game. We're not going to dabble in his double-double market going against Philly. See, this is the stuff player prop guys look at, Raheem. I'm looking at who traded this guy, who hurt him that I can benefit and bet some money on. So if they are giving me Fultz lines, which they probably won't until about 15 minutes before tip, and there's no Franz Wagner, so I'm going to get a decent amount of minutes out of Fultz, I may have to sprinkle depending what lines we get.
So what do you think because I'm looking at Fultz right now. He's averaged 11 points, 5 assists, 2 rebounds, well, 3 rebounds in 8 games against the Sixers in his career. And I know you look back at, I think, the game he played last year on February 1st. He had 18 points, three rebounds, 2 assists. Like, what number are you looking for on a Fultz? Like, and points, rebounds, assists. Like, what are you kind of looking at there?
I would probably look at his 15 plus alt lines. I just need to see, because I'm going to assume that he's going to get a decent amount of minutes. Assuming Franz is out, when he plays 27 plus this season, he's had, it's not as good as I'd hoped. He's had 15 plus only twice when he's played 27 plus minutes. If I got a PRA line on him at, I want to say 19.5 to 20.5. 20.5 would probably be my cap on his PRA line. If I got that, I would dabble. And if they gave me 10-1 on a double-double, I'd probably throw 5-10 bucks on it.
Okay.
Just because. Yeah.
So I have another 100 pick. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to go with it. I think I'm going to stay away. Just because, I mean, right now, I'm still waiting on some injury news. I'm just still waiting on some stuff. So I think we're just going to roll with the Sixers tonight for the 100. So actually, I want to ask you about this team. What do you think about the Knicks going into the postseason?
I feel so bad. So I'm a Jersey guy. I don't have a fandom allegiance to the Knicks, but I'm surrounded by Knicks fans and I tend to root for them just out of principle. I love what they're doing. I love what Tibbs has done with this team. They're completely overachieving. I think everybody agrees with that. The reason I feel bad is what could have been if we got a healthy Randle. I think this could have been the team that actually challenges Boston and could take them 7. I don't think Boston's going 7 at any point in the playoffs. But this Knicks team could have with a healthy Randle. I think their ceiling is the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they could get there depending on how the seeding shakes out. You got to love Brunson. You got to love Josh Hart. I mean, when New York basketball is good, it's good for the NBA. So I like seeing that. I just, they're capped. There's a glass ceiling for them.
Yeah. It's just tough for me just because I do think Jalen Brunson has to do so much. And it's just like, I just don't know if this is totally sustainable what he's doing to do it this long. And I love Jalen Brunson, but it's like he needs that second guy. But when I look at what the Knicks have done with Jalen Brunson and OG Anunoby in the lineup, they're 18-3 with OG Anunoby in the lineup, which is like absurd.
They have a guy. They have a perimeter defender. They have a guy that you can throw on a Jason Tatum, but unfortunately they have Jaylen Brown. You know, like they have that guy, assuming he's at his health and he won't come back till he's fully healthy. DVD can light it up from 3, obviously what Brunson's doing. I had such higher hopes. I'm glad I didn't buy midseason right after the deadline because Randall's injury crushed it. It sucks, man.
Yeah, I wanted to buy too. But yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Because there's a lot of Knicks fans and a lot of Knicks media who feel like this team is legitimately serious. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I got to ask you, with the new positionless All-NBA, does Brunson make your first team All-NBA? He's my second, right? He's on my second team. Does he make your first team All-NBA? Because that's going to be a discussion with this new positionless All-NBA.
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
And it's because I can't put him over Luka and I can't put him over SGA.
The beauty is you don't have to. See, that's why it's a head scratcher. So I put him on my second team. I followed the same format. I can't go away from.
Yeah, I can't go away from that either. I think it's preposterous because at the end of the day, the all NBA team should be an all NBA team.
It's going to be guards. Yeah, I know. They're just going to load up, and then you'll have like Tatum and Luka be the only forwards on the first team. So it does kind of suck.
Yeah, like it has to be an actual team. But let the people know where they can find you.
I am at Prop Holiday, 2 L's on Twitter. That is the same thing on Instagram. I run a Discord. It's called The Prop Shop. I'm giving out my NBA picks daily. I'm going to do some Summer League. I'm going to do the Olympics. I write for PicksWise. I'm a writer for PicksWise. And I'm tweeting random garbage all day. So I thank you for having me on. Before we go, I have one question I wanted to bring up to you. I need your opinion on this.
What's up?
Can Wemby pull off Defensive Player of the Year? It is the most controversial thing. Everybody is split on Twitter. The odds do not indicate that he has a chance. But I'm hearing real guys, Ryan Russillo, your guy, saying I'm voting him Defensive Player of the Year. There has to be more than one person with that vote that has that mentality. Can he pull it off? He's plus 1,000 right now.
So Michael Pena from The Ringer, he said he was voting for Wembanyama. And that came out yesterday. It's just tough for me because, I mean, like, a lot of the defensive metrics have Wemby there. I mean, he's third in defensive estimated plus minus. You're talking about a guy who, I mean, he's dominating on blocks. I think the Spurs, like, recover, like, almost 70% of his block shots. So people are going to look at those numbers and say Wemby should be Defensive Player of the Year. I think the problem comes is that historically this has been a team-based award. And the Minnesota Timberwolves are a top three seed in the West, and they're also first in defensive rating. And a big part of that is Rudy Gobert. So you're going to have to battle the old school voters who are just like, yo, I value winning and I value the first in defensive rating versus the new school voters who are just like, you know what? These are the metrics that we're looking at. Wemby is stopping a 3-on-1 fast break by himself. So I think it's worth a flyer, but I can't, you know, in good faith say that he's going to win this award.
No, I think it's going to go down to the wire, but I'm biased. I got him at 46-1 back in August. And the way he's been playing, obviously, like you said, there's some team to it. I look at Ant Edwards and McDaniels. I think they're two of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Conley's net rating defensively is up there. Kyle Anderson's net rating. But then you can make the argument that speaks to how good Rudy Gobert is for how high the defensive rating is for the other guys on the team. So I'm biased. I do think the odds are wrong. I do not think Gobert should be minus 3,000. This should be like Wemby plus 250, plus 350. So maybe they made their minds up months ago. I don't know, man. But he should.
I mean, that's what it feels. And if it feels the same with
Jokic.
Jokic and Luka, but I mean, it is what it is. That's our time for today. It's been the Rostradamus Show. Y'all know how it's going down. We got my main man, Prop Holiday, in the building. Let them know where they can find you on Twitter, on YouTube, and everything like that.
Twitter at Prop Holiday and the Prop Shop Discord. The link is in my bio. We are giving out NBA picks every day. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
No doubt. Thanks for coming on. Must be 21 and up and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with the Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 533-42 in Arizona. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. Call 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK in New York.